Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's been one of the most entertaining World Cups ever, and if you are an England fan, it is the tournament that just keeps on giving and giving. Hello, and welcome to the game World Cup Daily from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer, and thank you for joining us. We are here every match day of the World Cup, podcasting after 10 o'clock UK time every night. We are 21 match days into the tournament, and England are still in Russia. Gareth Southgate's men into the semi-finals. Pandemonium on the streets of London as we broadcast. In the studio with me, the man to bring statistical significance to all this emotion we're feeling right now, it's Bill Edgar. And in Samara, taking in all the euphoria, it's Ollie Kay. Later on, we'll be joined by Gab Marcotti, who's been watching England's semi-final opponents Croatia in Sochi. They've knocked out the host Russia thanks to a penalty shootout on Saturday night. But we have to start with the Three Lions making history. For only the second time on foreign soil, England have reached the World Cup semi-finals for the first time since 1990 after their 2-0 win over Sweden. Ollie, what was your expectation of how England would fare before the tournament started?
I think before the tournament, I said quarterfinals maximum, and anything less would possibly be a disappointment because the draw seemed to be slightly favourable. I mean, they were a good group with Belgium, Tunisia, and Panama. I thought it would be pretty disastrous if they didn't get through it. It wasn't like 2014 where they were with Italy, Uruguay and Costa Rica. It wasn't one of the tough groups. But I also felt that if they got through, they would get a team from the Colombia, Senegal, Poland, Japan group. So I thought there was a decent chance that they would get to the quarterfinals without having to be outstanding. I think they did get to the quarterfinals without having to be outstanding. And yet, having got to the quarterfinals, they weren't facing Brazil or Germany, as had been feared, if everything had gone the projected way, they were playing Sweden. And it was about as comfortable a quarterfinal as you could probably imagine or ever hope for. I mean, there were three good saves by Jordan Pickford later on or in the second half of the game, but it seems the result never really seemed to be in any doubt.
As Ollie says, Bill, after an agonising night against Colombia, this was a controlled, pretty relaxed affair, wasn't it?
It was really, yes. Firstly, England were far superior to Sweden, whereas against Colombia overall it was a fairly even game. And secondly, England got the goal after half an hour, so put them in control, and Sweden really didn't threaten too much. Certainly, I was a bit surprised how Sweden sat back, and it really allowed England to, almost as much as they wanted, to put the ball out wide, particularly to Trippier, and kind of put in crosses as much as they wanted. England were happy to put four in the box each time, and Trippier is fantastic at crossing. He's not like many wingers or fullbacks, sort of hit and hope merchants. He really thinks about where the ball's going. And it's effective, and they had four in there and created plenty of chances, and it was overall, yeah, very one-sided, really.
Well, everyone has been full of praise for Gareth Southgate, only the third man to lead England to the last four. He was the caretaker, given the full-time role. How did this all happen, Ollie?
How did it happen? Well, if you go back to 2016, and England flopped there. And there was talk then of getting him in a sort of interim role, and I think that was the FA's preference initially, to give them time before they made an appointment, which Gareth Southgate felt slightly offended by that suggestion and said no, that some other that went. And they were left with Gareth Southgate, and that seemed to be a position that would probably make him uncomfortable, because he felt it might be a bit too early for him, and they clearly felt it might be too early for him. But I don't think the football is spectacular, but it's just so well organised, it's methodical, and above all, I think what has really changed is the whole ethos around the team. The spirit is far better, and the sense of togetherness among the players. I know that can be overstated at times when a team is winning, but it really is one of the most important ingredients in this team. They are totally together. They're a team. They're the closest, most tight-knit, most close-knit England squad that I've seen, certainly in my time working for Times, which is 18 years. And they just, they look like they believe in each other and in what they're doing, and that combined with us, say, a slightly gentler draw has helped England no end, but they've also put the performances together to back that up with a system that really seems to be working.
Everyone in the England side plays for a top four team, apart from two of them, and they are the two who are perhaps in need of special praise. First of all, Bill, Harry Maguire of Leicester, the opening goalscorer.
Yes, he's had a fantastic tournament, and it's not really come out of the blue that much, because he's had a wonderful season with Leicester. First of all, very strong, tough in the air, powerful centre-back, winning the ball regularly. But on top of that, consistently able to carry the ball out from defence, an extraordinary number of dribbles he completed in the Premier League. Whereas John Stones has a reputation for being able to carry the ball out well, which he can, of course, but Maguire had something like 10 times as many dribbles as Stones in the Premier League last season, albeit having played about twice as much. So he really is a confident player, and with three at the back, three centre-backs, you need your centre-backs to be able to do that, and he can certainly do that as the wide left of the three centre-backs. And, of course, he got one of the goals.
Well, secondly, Ollie, you mentioned Jordan Pickford of Everton, who made some great saves, and after the penalty save in the shootout against Colombia, his confidence must be through the roof right now.
The saves he made in the second half were really good saves. I was in Nizhny Novgorod for the France-Uruguay quarter-final on Friday and saw Hugo Lloris make a truly spectacular save from Caceres. The saves he made weren't necessarily quite in that draw, but they were very good saves. One high up, pushed over the bar, one diving low to his right, and then a really good block by Henderson to prevent the rebound going in. And he just looked totally confident and totally assured, and sometimes confidence is clearly a good thing, sometimes overconfidence can be a problem. You wouldn't want somebody getting too carried away and feeling invincible and doing the kind of nonsense that the Uruguayan goalkeeper did on Friday, thinking, oh, I can say this in a spectacular way, and we all know how that ended up. But no, he is a goalkeeper who I think, even going into that Colombia game, people were raising questions about and saying, oh, is he really that good? Is he the goalkeeper that's going to win us a match, or is he just somebody who's got a good kick on him? And he's shown that he's got far more than he's a very, very good, promising goalkeeper.
One man that is yet to score at this tournament is Raheem Sterling. He had chances, he receives criticism. What are your thoughts on his importance to this team, Ollie?
Matt Dickinson tweeted after the game about having seen the BBC's player rate, I think, on the BBC's website, and he said it was depressing but predictable to see that Raheem Sterling got the lowest mark on that. Now, I think if anybody feels that Raheem Sterling is his worst player, I think there must be auction again with blinkers. Raheem Sterling missed a couple of chances, yes, but what is it that forwards always say? You've got to be in a position to miss those chances. If the chances don't come, that's when you should be worried. And Sterling, those chances came about because Sterling made good runs, and Harry Kane had a far less effective game in some ways. Nobody's, at least for me, suggesting Harry Kane should be dropped or anything like that. But for people to say that Kane had a more effective, more influential, more positive performance than Sterling is not true. I think Sterling affected the game in open play, and it affected all of the games in open play. It's just, he needs a goal to put to bed this idea that he can't finish. He just needs to be more composed in front of the goal.
And Bill, what are your thoughts on Sterling?
Well, he is the sort of player who he won't play safe. So whenever he gets the ball, something dramatic is going to happen. So he's looking to dribble past somebody, looking to make a kind of ambitious pass, and then running on to receive the pass. So just by that very nature, things will go wrong more often. So people look at the end product and sort of despair when, you know, he dribbles out of play or something. But I mean, overall, he was quite effective. His running off the ball was very good, very mobile. If you look at the miss or the failure to score in the first half, where he kind of hesitated in the box, he did control the ball brilliantly, came over his head and controlled the ball brilliantly, and he knocked the ball past the keeper, who made a really good save, and then he kind of hesitated and he might have passed back to Kane instead, but at least he got himself into that situation. You look at the alternatives, and there was not really any player in his style who's any better, you know, waiting in the rest of the squad, so certainly you would stick with him for the semi-final.
I'm sure defenders don't like playing against him. Nolly, we now know it will be England versus Croatia in the semi-final on Wednesday night. A talented team of Croatian players who probably were expected to go further in this tournament than England were.
I'm sure they were, particularly after that second game that I was at, the game against Argentina, where they beat them 3-0, and that remains one of the most impressive performances in the tournament. But what is even more impressive, really, is to beat Russia on home soil in a semi-final in Sochi on Saturday night. That's an amazing test of character that they passed. And we all know they've got Rakitic, they've got Modric, Perisic, Mandzukic. They have good players. We always knew that. But to have done what they did on Saturday night is, I think, more impressive in some ways than the Argentina win. I think that shows that they really believe they can win the World Cup. I don't think, having come through that, anything that England can throw at them will scare them. So they will fancy their chances. They will be comfortably the best team England have faced so far.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no,
yes. How would that go in the
booth? Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
The Game, World Cup Daily from The Times with Natalie Sawyer.
You can hear live commentary of both of the semi-finals on TalkSport. It starts with France taking on Belgium this Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Then the clash between England and Croatia is live at the same time on Wednesday night on TalkSport. Croatia are World Cup semi-finalists for the first time in 20 years after knocking out the hosts Russia. More incredible drama in Sochi with a game that swung both ways and ended after extra time 2-2. And for the second round in a row, Croatia progress on penalties and Ivan Rakitic once again scores the winning penalty. Gab Markotti joins us now. And Gab, Russia's World Cup adventure ends here. What was the mood inside the stadium in Sochi?
Well, Natalie, as you can imagine, it was an absolute roller coaster of a game. Majority Russian fans, as you'd expect here in here in Sochi. But I think, I know it's a cliche, but they left with a sense that this team really made their country proud. Stanislav Churchill, the Russia boss, coming after afterwards and saying, you know, we made this whole nation fall in love with us. And it's true, and they did. And, you know, the way they battled in this game, they really took Croatia by surprise in the first half. They pressed them high, totally different to the way they played against Spain. Obviously, they took the lead, were pegged back, and got that incredible last-ditch equalizer with Mario Fernandez, which ultimately sent the game into penalties. And when you talk about this Russia team, you're talking about a team that failed to win its previous seven games. I think, like, it was like one victory in the previous 11 months, something silly like that. They had a rash of injuries in central defense. They had to call up a 39-year-old, who's going to be 39 on July 14th, Sergei Ignashevich. And, you know, when they played the first sort of tough opponent, Uruguay, they got crowned. So, you know, I think there was sort of this sense that the wheels are going to come off. But, you know, then they take Spain out of the tournament, and then they push them, they go and they push Croatia the way they did. I think a lot of people have a newfound faith in this Russian national side.
We are all getting very carried away here in England. Why don't you bring us back to reality? What do England have to fear from Croatia, do you think?
I mean, I think in Croatia, you've got a team that's experienced, a team that's battle-hardened, you know, a team that, if they so choose, and they chose not to do this against Russia, I was interested to see how they approach the England game, but if they so choose, you know, between Modric and Brozovic and Rakitic and Bade, if they want him, or Kovacic, you know, they've got midfielders that can basically keep the ball forever while also being incisive. I think that's something that Southgate's going to is going to have to deal with. It's going to put a lot of strain on Lingard and Dele Alli to go and kind of disrupt that tremendous ball movement that Croatia has. Mandzukic is obviously a big, strong forward, but I think England are probably a little more comfortable with that. The defenders, Kane and Sterling against Dejan Lovren and Domagoj Vida, again, that's something that you would imagine England can probably exploit. I think England's big advantage is simply the fact that they're going to be more rested. You know, they played less football. Yes, they had the extra time against Colombia, but obviously they made Swiss work of Sweden, whereas it's not just the fact that Croatia had sort of two 120-minute games. It's the fact that you know, they were just physically so punishing. Russia just running a lot, taking a lot out of them. We'll have to get the injury report, but certainly Daniel Subasic looked like he had cramps late in the game. The right back, Simon Vrsaljko, had to come off. So all these things together, you know, this Croatia team really looked like, you know, they've been through a military campaign, and they're going to have to power up pretty quickly to get the best of England.
Who do you think is going to be under more pressure, or who will be the favourites?
I mean, I think neither Croatia nor England probably expected to be this far, right? So in that sense, they're probably playing with house money to some degree. But of course, having come this far, you know, you'd be really disappointed if they screwed up. And I think this applies to both of them. I don't think that people are necessarily going to turn on Zlatko Dalic or Gareth Southgate if they get knocked out. I think a lot's going to depend on how they go out, whichever one does go out. Because, you know, I think right now there's a tremendous amount of good feeling back home around both these teams. They're proud of the way they played, proud of the way they dealt with adversity. You know, think back to obviously the Colombia game and the way England kept their discipline, and clearly Croatia's had plenty of adversity tonight. So I don't know that these two managers necessarily feel the pressure beyond the pressure that they put on themselves.
Well, England and Croatia have never met at the World Cup finals, but there are, Bill, many memories from clashes between these sides in the last 15 years.
Yeah, well, there's the depressing memory of 2007, Steve McLaren's last game, when England came from 2-0 down to draw 2-2. They just they were heading for the European Championship finals of 2008, but Croatia scored 10 minutes from the end, and McLaren was on his way. On the other hand, Euro 2004... Wayne Rooney was absolutely at his peak, albeit at the age of 19, I think he was. And England had a fantastic victory over Croatia there. So England will hope to draw on that on Wednesday.
The Game, World Cup Daily from The Times with Natalie Sawyer.
We will be giving you a Times trivia teaser question every day on every podcast as provided by Bill Edgar, who is sat opposite me. Last time out, we asked you who is the only member of England's 23-man squad at this World Cup who is known by his middle name rather than his first name. Bill, whose passport should we be checking?
Well, it's the man who popped up with the opening goal today against Sweden. It's Jacob Harry Maguire.
Fascinating. It's funny because you would look at him and you wouldn't think of he's a Jacob. You think he's a Harry, but not a Jacob.
No, you thought there were two Harrys in the England team. Actually, there's only one genuine one.
And I'm sure Harry Kane reminds him of that. But our teaser for you today, which member of France's starting 11 in the quarterfinal win over Uruguay was not born in France? That is a tough one as well. Tune into our next podcast to find out the answer. We've discussed England versus Croatia, but let's look ahead to the first semi-final in St. Petersburg on Tuesday night. France versus Belgium. These two nations have faced each other twice before at the World Cup. A first round match in 1938 and a third place playoff in 1986. So this, Bill, is by far the biggest meeting ever between these two sides.
Yes, the two neighbours in Western Europe. They both produced some very exciting play in the knockout stages. So certainly plenty to look forward to. France against Argentina, certainly. You had Mbappe suddenly showing himself as a world beater. Long loping strides, burning off various defenders. Didn't quite manage it against Uruguay as France got past them in the quarterfinals. But then, of course, Belgium, we've got Eden Hazard, who is having an amazing tournament. He's at his very very Chelsea best, and he will have a particular interest, as it were, in this final because he grew up, I think he grew up close to the French border, and yet, but he actually developed as a player from something like the age of 14 in France. They just decided his game would come on better across the border, so he knows French football very well, and he had a fantastic game against Brazil. So I guess he'll be the one that the French will be looking out for.
Well, France have won every major tournament meeting between these two teams, but I know you've mentioned Eden Hazard there, but is this the greatest Belgian team of all time?
Well, you mentioned the 1986 team that played France in the third place playoff. That was certainly a great team. I remember one of the all-time great World Cup games when they beat the Soviet Union 4-3 earlier in that tournament, in the last 16, I think it was. Belgium certainly had a brilliant team then. They also got to the 1980 European Championship final, and 2 years after Bruges had got to the European Cup final, lost to Liverpool. So they had a very good team around there. But certainly you could argue this is their greatest ever team, with so many amazing individual talents. And it's certainly come together for them much more than in the past two or three tournaments.
You mentioned it coming together. Well, nine different Belgians have scored at this World Cup. That's the most goal scorers in this tournament. They can score from anywhere.
Yes, they can, certainly. They've got Hazard and De Bruyne, the attacking midfielders, Mertens as well, of course, Lukaku up front. Meunier is certainly an attacking threat from right wing back. The centre-backs can score from set pieces. Yes, you don't know where to look with them. France really, it's no use just kind of stopping a couple of players at set pieces, for example. I mean, you've got to look everywhere. So that's always a good sign, I think, when the goals are coming from all directions. It shows a sign of a team in form.
Can you pick a winner for this one?
I think, well, first we should say that the two semi-finals were at least reasonably well matched, so that's good. I guess I would just go with Belgium, but maybe 55-45%, you know, very close.
You like these narrow percentages. Yeah. Well, that is it for now. Many thanks to my guests today, Bill Edgar, Oliver Kay and Gab Marcotti. Subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet for just £1 a week for your first 8 weeks. Search The Times subscription for more information. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast supplier. And we'll be back on Tuesday night after France versus Belgium, while also looking ahead to England's semi-final with Croatia. We cannot wait.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.